The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Joining us now on the RingCentral phone line is Kim Wallace from Renaissance Macro Research. Kim, welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Just great. So much to talk about besides, I mean, we've got the budget deal ongoing. We've got housing reform. But let's start with this deal, what it means for the president.
Well, you know, that depends, of course, what happens over the coming months. But certainly several administrations, several presidents, including this one, have attempted to de-risk the Middle East, if you will. And a major step in addressing geopolitical risks, not only in that region, but globally, is what to do about Iran and its nuclear program. So if you look at this as a initial step toward finding out whether or not the world can trust Iran and its nuclear program, then it's, you know, it's a step in the right direction. I think it's very hard to take it much further than that just now.
What is the primary, then, topic on the agenda, say, this week for Washington as we head to Thanksgiving, Kim?
Well, I think the focus will be, at least for markets, will in no particular order still be whether or not the fiscal policymakers can come to a small deal next month, and whether or not the Open Market Committee continues to behave in a manner that markets find at least understandable, if not prudent at all times. And more than that, there's not much on the agenda this week. Both the House and the Senate are out, and you know, the holiday soon will take over. And make this a little docile place for one of the few weeks out of the year.
But spit back, though, because we're going to be, I bet you that everybody we talk to from now until the end of the year, if we're looking at what's going to happen to the bond market in 2014, if we talk about what's going to happen to the stock market in 2014, one of the big topics is going to be what happens in Washington, what happens in this budget debate. So set the table for us. Where are we now as November 2013 draws to a close and we start, you know, stepping back for the holidays, but getting ready for 2014?
So in terms of fiscal policy, the big risks have been around funding of government and threats of a shutdown, and then what to do about the debt ceiling. The budget conferees are up against the deadline of December 13 to come up with a plan that addresses funding for the remainder of the fiscal year 14. That tension will come in the middle of January when the current funding runs out, and then what to do about debt ceiling sometime in the spring when the Treasury no longer has borrowing authority or cash to manage its bills. This conference is motivated to accomplish something for a lot of connected reasons. One, the something is very small, very meager. As part of that, both sides are now interested publicly in doing away with the FY14 sequester for various reasons, and this provides them an opportunity to do that by coming up with other savings to replace the savings the sequester would have brought. I think also, when you look institutionally, Congress, both Democrats and Republicans, have reasons to stay out of the headlines. For right now, the president is absorbing a lot of negative press, and his approval ratings have taken a hit, and that's shown in the last 3 weeks. Republicans don't want to return to the first 2 or 3 weeks of October when they were the focus of the country's ire, and Democrats increasingly on the Hill have reason to differentiate from this president. So my guess is that the budget conference is a great way for Congress to, again, leave the adverse headlines to the president and actually get some credit for accomplishing something, albeit very small. Bottom line, I think we opened the books in 2014, and the last remaining top-down risk that people really worried about in 2013, that is Washington fiscal policy, has been removed or greatly muted. I don't think it'll be that much of a risk going into 2014.
What kind of deal will it be? Will there be any revenue-raising possibilities whatsoever?
Well, one of the reasons, another reason it's going to be a small deal, minimal at best, is that Republicans are not in this for tax increases, and Democrats are not in this for meaningful entitlement spending reductions, or at least things that would hit Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare beneficiaries in the near term. And so on the revenue side, they're going to focus on fees and other offsetting receipts that don't amount to tax increases. And on the benefit side, they will try to to target some of the so-called tax expenditures and shave those in a way that won't be felt by most Americans. My guess is you're looking at a sum total of $100 to $200 billion of savings over the life of the program if they're successful in coming to an agreement.
Ultimately, Kim, is it going to take what it's often taken in the past, a real kind of crisis in the markets that lights a fire under Congress?
Yeah, you know, possibly, Kathleen, but my view of fiscal policy, meaningful fiscal policy out of Washington, is you got to take a long view. It could be another 2 or 3 years before we get to a point where both parties view it to be either in their interest to get something done or both parties fear not doing something. This small budget conference that's going on now could be a precursor to something more meaningful in 2015. It's just too soon to know.
What about housing reform legislation, Kim? Is that on the cards before the year end?
You know, it's certainly being discussed. The Senate Banking Committee has held, I believe now, its 15th hearing on the topic on Friday, and continue to say, staff at the committee say that the committee will work on a draft before the year end. Obviously, the calendar is slipping, so is that promise. The short answer is yes, it's on the docket. There's not a lot of momentum behind housing finance reform just yet for any number of reasons, one of which continues to be recovery in the housing market, and although that has stalled a bit in the last 6 weeks or so, continues to show better signs than it had before the crisis, obviously. Some of the agencies have been engaged in rulemaking that's meant to clean up the space, again, post-crisis format. But really, you need legislation to send, in my view at least, to send clear signals to private capitalists that it's okay to get back into the housing space in all its many areas, origination, securitization, warehousing, the rest of it. And so I continue to be a stale bull on housing finance reform. If the Senate's able to pass something in the first quarter that industry supports broadly, that'll entice the House to negotiate. You might be able to get a bill by June or July going to the president, but again, time is slipping.
So, again, a little more detail on what a bill will look like that is that the private industry likes, in other words, banks and other people in the mortgage industry and finance industry, that Republicans and Democrats can agree on. It seems to me we have guests on who, whenever somebody mentions this, they're, you know, they range from just, you know, blow it all up, it's all got to be private industry, to those who say there's no way, you have to have the government backing housing because we saw what happened in the last financial crisis. What would a deal look like to you that would actually work?
Well, it's going to be a big bill if you get something that actually works and addresses all of the areas that are in need of policy right now. In terms of what you were saying about people believe it's going to happen or not, that's in part because there are differing views inside the political parties and inside the industry over what would work. For example, there's still pretty strong political backing among Republicans and Democrats, at least in the administration, to fold Fannie and Freddie into a financial market utility that provides access, affordability for loans in the, you know, conforming space, call it 75K to 350, just on average. Something like that could easily be done and likely save taxpayers' money over time. Obviously, some of the recapitalizations of Fannie and Freddie, actually there have been three in the last 70 years, have cost a good bit of money. The question is, do we as taxpayers need to spend that money to get affordability and access into the conforming market? Differing views, but certainly there's a case to be made that you don't have to do it solely by supporting Fannie and Freddie structure. In terms of origination, there's still ongoing debate over things like debt-to-income levels and down payment. There are some people who believe, many in the housing advocacy community, that down payment should be as low as zero. You hear a lot about 3.5. Again, it's a way to guarantee access to creditworthy borrowers. Of course, there are some people who push back on that and say that it's low skin in the game, if you will, by borrowers that helped get housing market into the problems it realized last decade and part of this decade.
Kim, give us the argument for that. Give us the argument for no or very little down payment.
I am probably not the best person to argue that, because I, you know, my sense is that just as policymakers are asking institutions to provide more buffer in their operations, whether it's capital rules or leverage coverage ratio rules or net funding buffer rules. You know, both sides of the table, in my view at least, ought to have more skin in the game and be more realistic about borrowing, about credit. Having said that, there's evidence that you can structure programs that have low down payments that will succeed in the hands of some borrowers. The question, of course, is magnitude and who should be covered by the rules. That's part of what the debate is now. I don't think there's a magic number, but certainly when you look at indebtedness at the household level in the U.S., U.S. has leveled off, but it's spent the last 3-4 years deleveraging as a group, but that's not true of all households. And so I'm not sure that there's a right or wrong answer. I just think that it's important for people to understand if you're going to engage credit, it has to be with full expectations on both sides of the table. Given some of the rules that have come out, qualified mortgage, qualified residential mortgage rules that make clear what the ability to pay strictures are for lenders, it seems to me to be fair that you ought to look at the other side of the table and make sure that people coming in mm-hmm. to borrow also are in good shape to do that.
So, Kim, another big area and a big battle as the year is drawing to a close has been the Affordable Care Act, the website problems. How does that leave the president and his team? How does it leave him vis-a-vis Congress as the year ends and we go into 2014?
Not in a great place. I mean, let's just be blunt about it. There are a lot of Democrats who continue to worry that despite intermediate and long-term benefits of changing federal health care programs, both in terms of cost savings, in terms of other efficiencies, and in terms of addressing spending, that is, reducing the spending on these programs, that the near-term politics of it, i.e. 2014, midterm elections, will be difficult if things don't improve soon. It begins with the technology. The technology, obviously, is the first phase of transition to a different system, and that hasn't gone well. I think that's generously put. We'll see how it goes, you know, by November 30th, and as we get into the first quarter of next year. The hope among some Democrats is that the headlines will have changed from interfacing with the system online to actually interfacing with doctors and insurers in the new system. We'll see how it goes.
You know, the president is due to speak on immigration in just a couple of hours. 2:10 is the time that he's down for that. Is he trying to change the subject a little bit now, get people's focus off healthcare and onto something else? And what does he intend on achieving with immigration?
Yeah. You know, you could say that. I'm not sure that it's absolutely fair. The president has focused on immigration for much of the 5 years, almost 5 years he's been in office, and certainly was integral in getting legislation pushed through the Senate. You talk about the prospects of immigration reform. I continue to believe odds are extraordinarily low that you'll have comprehensive immigration reform sent to the president before the midterm elections. And for very straightforward reasons. Many of the voters in the U.S. don't support it. And so in a democracy, I think immigration is a perfect example of something that works the way democracy is supposed to work. Value judgments aside, there are many districts for which immigration reform is not high on the list and therefore it won't be high on the list of their elected representatives. Over time, obviously, demography and other changes in our economy and in our country tell you that we'll have to address immigration reform, hopefully in a more comprehensive basis, but I don't think it's going to be calendar 2014.
How about energy, since we're going through the list of things that are perennial big topics, energy policy? Do you see anything on the horizon that could actually shift, actually make a difference next year?
Oh, I think anything that would shift would be a negative. I think energy policy has been very good and supportive of the markets, those energy markets and sectors, for the last 6 quarters. You know, the shale story obviously has changed the energy story in the country, and that has helped change some of the story around manufacturing and employment. My guess is that legislation is unlikely. Comprehensive legislation on energy is unlikely, but I'm not sure that there are many people who view it as warranted. When you look at issues like shale, the states are being left to take the first lead in regulating sites and the integrity of sites of rigs that bring up shale oil and gas. Wyoming is the latest model in terms of state rules. Colorado had been until some of the difficulties in that state. When you look at LNG, the Department of Energy has approved, I believe now, five import-export terminals this year, increasing the pace of those approvals, which is just a statement that the U.S. is belatedly getting into the LNG game. Of the countries who've been successful in LNG, they've had three elements in common: supply, transport, and storage. The U.S. has stumbled into supply in a big way the last 3 to 5 years. And so DOE seems intent on working with business to make a larger footprint, if you will, for the U.S. in LNG. So energy, strong story. Employment continues to ramp up in that space. The energy ETF, XLE, is up, last time I looked, 20% year to date.
Okay. Kim Wallace, thanks so much.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius XM Satellite Radio Channel 119. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.